Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is the Best Hang Podcast featuring Max Kerman, Shane Cunningham, and I am Mike Bierman. Welcome to the Best Hang Podcast. I'm Mike, we got Max, we got Shane, and we are here with another episode of hopefully your favorite podcast if you're listening, or one of your favorite podcasts. Lots has been going on. We got lots of stories coming up, but to start the pod, we're just going to open the floor to our good friend and co-host, Shane Cunningham.
Geez, I've been dreading this for a long time, kind of avoiding it, because my good friend Bert Van Lierop unfortunately passed away, and he was, you know, he was in his 80s, so it wasn't completely unexpected. He had Parkinson's, he had complications from that, but I found out from a friend of his, because I wasn't very close with his family, but he passed away on December 11th. He still hasn't had his celebration of life, but I'm planning on going to that when that is announced. But anyway, yeah, like
maybe give the listeners like some context for who Bert was, like creatively.
Very unique character in your life and in our life in a way.
Totally. He sort of ended up being part of ours.
Yeah, so, you know, Bert came along at a weird point in my life. I was 22 years old. I had no job, no girlfriend, no driver's license, no idea what I was going to do with my life. I knew what I wanted to do with my life. And this was at a point where, you know, your brother and you were starting the band. Seemed like they had something cooking. My other friends were going to college. And I was just like, I'm never going to make it happen. I don't know how it's going to come together for me. And my parents, who are very great, they weren't exactly worried that I might not make anything of myself. So I really had no external motivation. It was all up to me. I felt very alone. And then one day I met this man at a Tim Hortons, and he was very kind. He had a Dutch accent. I found him unintentionally funny. I found him intentionally funny. And he just, I was in Burlington at a time. I just did my last day at a landscaping job. Mm. I was in Burlington. I was about to take the bus back.
And he said, for our listeners, busing from Burlington to Hamilton is a royal pain in the ass.
Oh, it is, man. Yes.
It is way too long, and there's like, you know, one route, and it sucks.
So after talking to this man, we separated, and then I just, you know, sat at the bus stop. But then he pulled up to the bus stop, and he says, want a lift? I was like, I think he's not going to kill me. He could be a serial killer, but fuck it. I hate the commute that much.
So
I'm going to get into this car. And
he was older. You could probably take him if it came to that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, but we get talking about what I want to do for a living. I tell him I have this chance to potentially get a short film on television. I need a police chief. I'd like someone who's preferably older. Any chance you've ever thought about acting? Bert?
He's a handsome man too.
Oh yeah,
he almost looks like an actor.
He's very tan, He was in good shape. And I asked him if he ever thought about acting. He's like, all the time. Like, he just right away, he was just down to do it. And he's like, if we're going to do this, we have to do it right. So he wanted the script to be sent to him immediately. He wanted to pick up every prop. He drove me everywhere. Before I know it, he's on set. He's killing it. Like, he's the star of this cop film. I ended up doing another film with him called Teen Wolf 3. At this point, we become,
which is exactly,
like,
what it sounds like.
Yes.
Sanctioned sequel to the first two.
Exactly. That's the way to word it. We ended up working for HGTV from there. We became business partners, friends. We went on, like, MTV. I got to meet Quentin Tarantino. We entered a contest when Inglourious Basterds was coming out, and we had a dressing room beside Quentin Tarantino. And then all of a sudden, Bert's on MTV for a 3-month stint. They hired him to play Samuel L. Jackson in a recurring role on MTV as, like, this skit where Bert is just Samuel L. Jackson. There was a time where Bert, he hadn't talked to his brother in like 20 years. He had 10 siblings, but there was this one brother he was estranged from. So we went on a Nebraska, if anyone's seen this movie with Will Forte, Alexander Payne directed it. We went on an adventure like that, where we just were looking for Bert's estranged brother. It was 3 days, I think it took us, but we found him at a bar.
In Hamilton?
No, it was like a 4-hour drive away. Bert and I got a hotel. I remember we saw the movie Capote at the time, so whatever. And then we found his brother at a bar. Like, we knew his brother was a bit of a bar hound or whatever. And then we found him. And then they just had this quick interaction. Bert slipped him some cash. And then we just rode away. And I was like, that was it? That was all this time? It was like that quick interaction. He's like, that was all I needed. And it was just like so realistic. Because if it was a movie, it would be like fireworks and emotions and hugs and tears. But it was like, that's all Bert. Bert just wanted to see him and give him some cash. That was it. Anyway. Yeah, no one has changed my life the way Bert has. I don't think I'd be here without him. And it's just, you know, I was dreading him dying. And when you have a friend who's 45 years older... you know he's gonna die, but I was always thinking,
you're a bit on the clock.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, I'm really like dreading this. And we shot a documentary that ended up on Netflix where Bert is doing stand-up comedy. Like, Mark Myers directed it, and it's just, Bert's always the star. Like, I always
started in San Sebastian videos.
Starting a San Sebastian video.
Yeah, he stole the video.
He did,
man.
Fucking everything. And like, he did so much from 65 to 80. It's insane. But he did so much from 0 to 65. Like, back, like, Bert is from the Netherlands, and he was like a race car driver. He was a basketball TV announcer. He did, like, he was like a gymnast. Like, Bert did everything. He did everything well. He was the head of major construction. He was the most perfectionistic person I've ever met. Anything I did, he was like, you got to do it perfect. And I'm just like, I apply that to my life. Like, when, you know, we're shooting all this bullshit right now, and it's so stupid what we're shooting, but we're taking it so seriously, and every detail matters, and it still might not end up great, but we're trying so fucking hard. And that's what, like, Bert really instilled in me. And, you know, Bert taught me how to drive. Like, my parents never taught me how to drive. Bert taught me how to drive a car. And not, like, he's European, so he taught me how to drive a stick shift. He bought me the car. Like, I gave him the money, but I'm so helpless. I didn't even know how to purchase a vehicle. And he just showed up at my house with a stick shift. We go to a parking lot. He drives his very nice car to the parking lot. No, he drove the stick shift car to the parking lot. Then he drove me and him in his very nice car. It was actually a very nice Jeep, to a parking lot. And the first thing I did was crash into his car. His very nice car. God. Like, my dad would kill me. It would be terrifying. But Bert just laughed. Wow. He just thought it was hilarious and endearing that was my very first attempt at driving, was smashing into his car. But that's just how Bert was. It's like one of those one in a million type people that change your life. And yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot sometimes from his perspective. Like, obviously I've seen this journey in you with Bert, but I think a lot about, like you said, he had this extraordinary life before you guys even met, but he was so much older, you know, like he was born in his 60s or something when he met you. And it's like you gave him this sort of this amazing sort of decade of experiences where he's on MTV all of a sudden. And he's it's like, think about from his perspective, like the fact that you two met, you both got so much and enriched each other's lives and just basically had all these experiences that never would have happened if you guys don't sort of come together.
Like another stupid thing we did, like I got a Michael J. Fox tattoo, my right arm. And I was like a little nervous because this was back in the day when tattoos weren't as normal. And I was like, God, is this stupid if I get this huge portrait of Michael J. Fox? And Bert's like, I'll do it too. I was like, no, don't do that. He's like, well, what's something funny I could get? I was like, I don't know. What if you got a tattoo of yourself? And he's like, okay, what would I be doing? I'm like, maybe you're wearing a Motley Crue t-shirt, smoking a cigarette. He's like, I'll do that. And I was like, nah, I don't know. Anyway, we went through a bunch of iterations of what he could get. He ends up getting himself giving a thumbs up, smiling, wearing a Snatch TV t-shirt, which was the name of our production company. And just the idea that he's in a coffin at some point, I guess they burned him up. But I mean, like the fact that he was wearing like or having that Snatch TV thing when he died is just so.
And he had a wife and family, right?
Like, yeah, he had a wife and family. And his wife, Anya, was so nice. And
also
so nice
in the San Sebastian video. If you guys want to see Bert do some great work, you could go on YouTube and you can find all these things Shane talked about. Teen Wolf 3 is still up.
Teen Wolf 3 still, is up. And Bert was so proud of all of his film work. He did quite a lot of it. All of his MTV appearances are on B. Van Lierop short films. All one word. You can.
How do you spell Van Lierop?
V-A-N-L-I-E-R-O-P.
Cool.
He's in that Sansev video where Anya is her name? Annika? Anya?
Yeah, Anya. That's his wife.
She's in the opening and the end. Mm-hmm. She's really good in it too. Yeah. And then Delivery, which you did with Mark, where Bert is one of the stars of a movie that is on Crave right now.
Yeah.
You know, so if you have Crave, you can go watch Delivery starring Shane and Mark Myers, director of Dessert, and many Arkell's videos. And Bert, you know, who's a big part of that movie.
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously the weirdest relationship ever. A lot of people couldn't understand it. People thought
there were rumors.
Yes, there was definitely so many rumors, even within his family. It was like, I'm using Bert. Bert's using me. But we both knew we were just like perfect friends, business partners, everything. He was like a father figure to me, a best friend. And, you know, he showed me how to do things. I showed him how to do things. And just really good.
Yeah, man.
I did not think I was going to cry.
No, man. Even though, he was older, it's still shocking because I think of how impactful he was on your life. And then sort of by extension, our lives, just because he's been around and he's been one of these guys. And I knew all that stuff. So I don't think that this is, you know, I remember you telling me that stick shift story, I think you also had a date coming up. So it was almost like he was helping you learn to drive so you could pick up the date in the car, which always really felt sweet.
I didn't want to tell my potential date because I found that very embarrassing as a man, grown man. So Bert taught me for my date. So we had a deadline and, you know, I stalled the car out on the date, but I still got me and the date to the movie.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I remember you saying that, like, you really didn't know how to do the stick shift on the date. So it was just this uncomfortable... the awkwardness of that.
Oh yeah. And at one point I was having terrible insomnia and I never really smoked weed, and Bert obviously had never smoked weed, so he found a way to buy weed and we like smoked it together to see if it would help me.
Oh my god. So you guys just got high together?
Yeah, and we pulled this like stupid prank every time we'd get high in like this Tim Hortons parking lot, as like a lot of other kids were and stuff. And so our prank was we'd pull up to the drive-thru. I would go they'd go, hey, can I have your order? I'd be like, hey, man, could I please have a blueberry muffin? And I'd say, a milk, 2%, please. And maybe like a sprinkle vanilla donut. So, and then I would hop in the back and then Bert would pull up to pick up the food items. And be like, hello. And the guy would like look out. It's like, was that you just ordered? Be like, yes. And the guy would be like, okay, here's your milk. And then Bert would be like, took you long enough. What, were you milking the cow? And he just had all this, like, he just came up with that on the spot. But anyways, we'd laugh so hard and we would just do stupid shit like that all the time. Not even film it, you know, just for our own entertainment. Yeah, he was a character.
That is amazing. You know, So reminding me of a link that you just sent this morning. I haven't had a chance to read it, but it's about Willem Dafoe. Is that
what? He gives an interview.
Oh my God. I always thought Bert looked like Willem Dafoe too.
That's yeah. So we just, Mike sent an article in The Guardian as an interview with Willem Dafoe, and he's 82. And I've only read like a little excerpt about how he doesn't feel particularly old. But all of his friends keep dying because you're that age. And I was at a friend's funeral for grandpa who just passed away. And someone said a quote that I loved. It was like, there's an expression. It's like, it's best to die young as late as possible. And it sounds like, which is a great expression. And it sounds like Bert, like Bert was up for fun.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, like, you know, like, because there's nothing worse than like a cranky, sleepy old bastard, you know, like that's what I aspire to, you know, just be that old dude who's still like doing the drive-through hijinks. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
The fact that he wanted, and the fact that you offered that sense of fun to him is so special. And I think all old people like need a little bit of mischief in their life and a little bit of adventure. And,
oh, totally.
Yeah.
One time I mentioned that I was thinking it could be fun to go skydiving. So next time Bert and I were supposed to go to the gym because we were workout partners too. And Bert ended up getting like a 12 pack, by the way. He was insanely good at working out. So instead of going to the gym, Bert takes us to a skydiving range.
Oh my
and
God.
This was back in the day where you could do skydiving without the person attached to you. Like your first time, you could just jump out of a plane, you solo. You have to do a 4-hour course though to learn how to do it. So I'm like, Bert, oh my God, like I needed to mentally prepare for this. He's like, let's do it. You only live once. I'm like, okay. I do a 4-hour course to learn how to skydive. We both get up in the plane. I'm shitting my pants. Bert paid to have it videotaped, everything. Bert jumps out the plane first, fucking does it. And then the guy's like, you're next. I go, I can't do it. And then just my logic was, I'm like, if he dies, he's lived a whole life. Like, it doesn't matter if I die. I'm a young man. I'm in like early 20s. Like, I can't die. So that was how I justified it.
So you just went down?
You just landed with the plane?
You know, it still had to pay for it and everything. But Bert was just obviously totally cool that Bert did a perfect landing because Bert could just like learn this shit. And that's how he was.
Do you look back and think like, God, I had so much free time. Like, you have no free time in your life anymore to do anything. Yes. And you're like, yeah, I guess it was just like, I could casually take 5 hours off and just on any given day and just go skydiving if someone surprised me with it.
Do you think when you get to like your mid 60s that you will be a mentor to a young person like this? You know, your daughter's be older.
So. I'm too worried about the public perception of it all. I would like, Bert just knew he wasn't a creep. He didn't give a shit. He's like, listen, I have three daughters. He's like, I always wanted a son, like that type of figure.
Yeah.
He's always say, you're the son I always wanted. And I say, you're the dad I never asked for or something. Like we had this like weird routine. We do that.
Oh,
but
man.
Yeah, it was an interesting, very interesting relationship. You know, we would also fight like cats and dogs too. We'd have like real arguments that you wouldn't picture two people because you think I'd be like gentler with him because he's older or like he'd be. But we would like one time we got in a fight. And he pulled off to the side of the road and said, get out. And he hopped out in 1930s style, held up his dukes. And he actually wanted to fight me. But it was so silly. And then we just started laughing eventually because we knew. But it was honestly, I think he even took a swing at me. Oh, it was just crazy.
Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. Like you could do a Nebraska-esque movie about Bert and I's relationship. The more I've been thinking about it, I'm like, yeah, actually more went on in our relationship than even went on in that movie.
Oh, there's
in Nebraska.
So much to mine from if you made that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so vivid the way you're describing all of it.
You should write a movie.
Yeah. Write that.
And I'm very thankful, by the way, to the construction worker who Bert worked with because he was the head of major construction, Bert was, because I would have never even known he passed.
Had you not been in touch?
Well, because Anya, his wife, I was very close with and we had a very friendly relationship, but his daughters were kind of like, you know, wondering, or somebody using each other, whatever. So we never had that relationship where they would tell me. Mm. So I would have never found out. And I would be devastated if I missed his celebration of life. But that is happening this month. And thank you to that construction worker who did reach out and contact me.
Oh, wow. Beautiful.
But yeah, that's that story. Great. I didn't mean to cry. I didn't mean to take up so much time. In my mind, goodness. It went a lot smoother than that. But
no, that was beautifully put. That's an amazing way to remember somebody so special.
It's a life worth remembering and a story worth telling. And I'm glad we took the time, man.
Yeah, thank you.
R.I.P. Bert.
What did it tell us about Willem Dafoe? So I don't have to read the article. Anything good?
It's just like a good old feature where he's sitting there and he's, you know, he's kind of doing a Zoom and he just starts talking about his approach to sort of like filmmaking. And so he was like a real theater guy in the late 70s. And it was like they were artists and they were struggling and romanticized that time. But he just talks about, you know, what it's like to then make money, or, you know, not saying the word selling out, but what that looks like going forward and his thoughts on it, the state of the cinema. And then he gets kind of philosophical about growing up. Did you read it, Ash? You're nodding your head a little bit. Okay. And then he just starts sort of talking about, you know, like you said, that part, Max, where he's like, you know, I'm getting old, but I didn't really realize, you know, it's like, I hear somebody I worked with died. I'm like, what happened? I'm like, oh, right. They're 82 years old. They're 83 years old. That's what happens. And yeah, he just kind of talked about his outlook on things and what he cared about, and how it ends with him saying, because he's going to be the new Tim Burton Beetlejuice movie. And I guess
not playing Beetlejuice.
No. He's playing like an undead detective that I guess he let slip accidentally. And so the reporter, this person from The Guardian, brings it up, and he's like, oh, he's like, I fucked up. He's like, I knew I shouldn't have said it, because Tim Burton seems like the sort of guy that doesn't want info about his movie out. He's like, so I fucked up, but you know what? Life's short, whatever. And he just kind of kept it moving, and just a sort of outlook on how he approaches his art and all that stuff was really good, but it's worth a read.
Another article I want to recommend is about Scott Frank, who is Hollywood's most decorated script doctor. It's in the New Yorker. It's written by my favorite journalist, Patrick Radden Keefe. And for those of you who don't know, a script doctor is somebody who the studio hires after a script has already been submitted to fix the script, to make sure that the characters are more vivid and the story makes more sense. So he's the guy responsible for saving and rewriting Saving Private Ryan and The Ring. He also wrote The Queen's Gambit. He directs, produces other people's work. And it's really an amazing story about a guy with a kind of a particular skill. But what I took from it, there's a few different parts in the article. Specifically, he likes to work on like 20 different things at once. He has like a folder with like all my projects. So I'm like, okay, I identify with that and how he can hop around from one to the next. He also, after Queen's Gambit, which keep in mind was like the biggest success on Netflix, like during the pandemic, his next script that he took off got passed on by everyone in Hollywood. Wow. So it's like even the guy who's the top dog, who gets paid $300,000 a week to rewrite people's scripts, he gets told no. And the last thing is that in the article, he's working on an opera based on the music of The Killers with Brandon Flowers and one of the guys from Hamilton, the musical. And it's about like a fictional Las Vegas like town, like the beginnings the place is called Dustland. And so he's working on it, and he says to the writer, he says to the journalist who's writing the piece, he's like, I had no idea how to write an opera. I literally Googled how to write libretto, but isn't this so fun? And it was like, for a guy who's so accomplished in the field of writing to go, I'm just going to Google it. Let's start there. And I thought that was very cool.
If he can pull that opera off,
yeah,
that'll be amazing.
Right?
Because it feels like you couldn't help but laughing if it's like, it started out with a kiss. Like, you know.
I think it's an opera.
Yeah. If you can pull that off, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, I guess I wonder how much like musical license they're going to take with those songs and how much they're going to turn into an opera. I don't know.
And what's the story they're going to tell?
What's the story? But so many killer songs are about Vegas. So there's like so many.
Isn't that one about a robot or spaceman?
There's spaceman, but there's some Brandon Flowers solo songs that are like, Welcome to Fabulous. Welcome to Fabulous Las Vegas. Yeah, it's all about Vegas. So it's cool. Anyway, I recommend that piece.
Yeah.
Ooh, very cool.
Okay, good one.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right?
For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Speaking of places in America, we just came back from one. As we teased in the last pod, we are fresh back from Philadelphia.
The city of brotherly love.
Pennsylvania, United States of America. What a trip.
Yeah.
The hell of a trip. Really the trip of a lifetime. I mean, how many times do we just look at each other throughout the weekend and just go, man, this is what it's all about.
It was so cool. So, of course, I was feeling some pressure, a little bit of guilt from other friends that would have also loved to be on the trip.
Did you get any pushback?
I got a little bit of pushback from different corners of my friend group.
Who, Mike M?
Mike M?
Yeah, who? I'm trying to think of who would be the biggest.
Well, no, I'll save that. Oh. But what I would say is that, you know, Nick invited Derek Hoffman, who's a dear friend of mine, and I introduced the two. He's a producer for Arkell Stuff. And the first person I thought of was Sean Dawson, because Sean, as I mentioned in the last pod, is a huge 76ers fan, and he has loved the team for like 8 years. So when Nick got the job there, it was a big deal. And as soon as I invited Sean goes, well, Mikey V's got to come too. Like,
bless that
Mikey, man. Like, Sean made up a plus one for himself. And of course, Mikey V is the biggest Hoops fan that I know and would love nothing more than this experience.
Does that hurt your feelings, Mike, that Max didn't come to that conclusion on his own?
I see the logic, but I'm a little hurt. No, I'm going to pile on with the guys. I just had the greatest weekend of my life.
I think though that like I try my best to be mindful, because the reality is I could have a great time hanging out with kind of any one of my friends in any of these situations. But it's just a matter of like identifying which friend would appreciate the most. So for like the Raptors season opener, I was like, I got to take Mike, because Mike has been drooling about this for the previous 6 months.
100%. I got to hang my hat on more stuff.
You got to hang your hat on more stuff.
Fielder, but like it seems he's so elusive. I got to start putting it on other stuff in your orbit.
Yeah, because you're like third or fourth option for a lot of these basketball or other things. But if it was like more specifically like, yeah, Nathan Fielder or some like weird comedy thing, you'd be number one.
If it was a Will Forte trip, would I be on that?
Yeah, you would be.
Ooh,
yeah. And it's also that thing where it's like, you know, you're saying like in your mind, it's like, oh, like Derek's going, I'm going. You don't want to overextend the invite. So it's like, it's just a plus one. If it's just a plus one, and it's Philadelphia, 76ers, that, of course, Sean should be your plus one. I would have been like, totally understand. Although when I was watching, you know, social media or something, seeing Sean, like, you know, in Philly, I would have been like, ugh. But I was so glad to get the invite.
And your musical too, Mike, which was a key component to this trip.
Yeah, because Nick,
I think,
also wanted to have a bit of a jam session, because he hasn't met as many Philadelphia musicians yet, but after this weekend he did.
Yeah. Guys can jump on to different instruments and,
people who can play. Music. And so anyway, but the funny part was, and this kind of speaks to my like level of planning and sort of like aloofness, is that we get off the plane, we get in a car, and Sean and Mike think that we're going to Nick's place, because Nick was putting us up, his family's out of town. And then they have no sense of Philadelphia geography. I have a sense of where I'm going, because I've been there and I know where the practice facility is. I go, hey guys, we're going to see practice right now. And Sean and Mike go, what? Like, yeah, we're going to practice. You know, we landed at 10:15, practice starts at 11. So immediately they're like, holy fuck.
It fucking went to another level right away. We're like, what? We're like, we're just going to the facility? And you were saying the facility, it was in New Jersey?
Yeah.
Again, I just got in the car. I don't pay attention. So it was like, go on. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so we pull up and we see Jenny. And by the way, Jenny is Nick's executive assistant. She came with him from Toronto, and she is just
the best.
The best. And immediately hooked us up with the 76ers gear, took us right to catering. We had some breakfast, and then we watched the practice from this sort of upper seating area. And media is allowed to come into at the end of practice, but I think only kind of close friends and family can kind of observe. And to see Nick run a practice was such a unique experience, and you appreciated the sort of presence that he has, because he's not only, you know, running practice for the players, but he has a coaching staff of 16 members, and he's making it all go. He has a DJ in the gym playing tunes. The second the whistle blows, The DJ kills the music. Nick makes a speech. As soon as he blows the whistle back on, the DJ puts the music
DJ's
back.
DJ's like on point with the cues.
It's like this effortless like production, and it keeps the rhythm of practice going, but also Nick doesn't have to like yell over, over the music.
Well, what's incredible observing is like Nick's attention to detail. He would be getting into drills. Like he'd have an assistant that was teaching a drill on one of these defensive things. And then Nick's like, let me get in there. And he's just so, he's meticulous. And you can just tell the guys are locked in, and also the chemistry with that team was really cool. But then also this ability to keep it light and keep guys like you could just tell like the vibes were really, really
good. Could you hear every word Nick is saying? Are you that close or is,
I mean, he's just sort of yelling stuff and we're hearing it. And the thing is, you know, Nick is such a student of it too. You know, he's read every book about coaching and leadership. And, you know, at the end of practice, he had like little prizes as a little thank you for staff that kind of went above and beyond, like
over
the holidays. Yeah. And you could just see the excitement the players had for the staff getting like a free pair of shoes or something like that.
Yeah.
So it was just like those little moments during practice, you know, can really bring a group together. And you know, he leaned in on that too, but he also was like would get on guys if they needed to go a little bit harder. So we saw practice, we went, hung out in his office, met Daryl Morey, and for our NBA fans, Daryl Morey is a celebrity.
He's like Messiah of Philly.
He's
an executive.
He's the team president, and it was great to see him and he and Nick interact. We also sat at catering with some assistant coaches, one of them being George Karl's son. Do you remember George Karl?
Of course. Seattle Supersonics.
So his son Kobe Karl ended up having a conversation with Mike for about like 25 minutes.
It was kind of nuts because we have this, there's this long table and we're all sitting there eating lunch in like the facility, and it's like Nick's over here. There's a couple other like Canadians that came down on the coaching staff, so we're all kind of catching up. Some Philly guys. It was great. And then Kobe comes walking up and I kind of recognize him, but not fully. And Botch, one of, also a guy, Stony Creek, shout out Botch. He's one of Nick's assistants too, who came from Toronto. He was like, hey, Kobe. He's like, he's got a podcast. Tell him about your podcast, Kobe. And then so Kobe just happens to be grabbing something from the drink fridge, which is by where I'm sitting. And then he sits right in front of me. And so when we start talking about podcasts, this is a podcast called, I'm going to look at it.
It's Curiosity and Coaching or
something. Yeah, it's like The Curious Learner or something like that. I'll figure out what it is and circle back. But he, and then so we just kind of started chatting and I was kind of like, why do I recognize this guy? And he starts explaining how he had Steve Kerr and Phil Jackson on his podcast through like his playing days. I'm like, okay, I knew this guy was a pro and he played with Kobe Bryant. And I'm starting to put it together. And then he mentioned, oh, my dad. And I was like, his dad's George Karl. It kind of clicked in. And then so like without, you know, then I realized, I was like, oh man, like I remember Kobe Karl, like when he was in the league, sort of in those, the 2008
season. Did he play in
season.
The league? Yeah.
He was on the Lakers. Like he played Lakers, with Kobe Bryant. And so then we just started talking.
There's two Kobes on the Lakers.
Yeah. There was
his name is spelled C-O-B-Y.
One with a C, one with a K. Okay. But Kobe Karl is like led this interesting life because his dad was the coach of those Sonics teams with Sean Kemp and Gary Payton. And then the Milwaukee teams with
Ray Allen.
Yeah. And Sam Cassell and Glenn Robinson. So it was just interesting talking about him growing up, his group of friends, how they would go to the games, what his life was like as a teen. I was like, were you a rock star like in high school? Because, you know, you like obviously were good enough to play in the league, but then also you were, had this situation where your dad's an NBA coach, you know, and he was just so cool and open. And what happened was, it was kind of the whole other table kind of did its own thing, right? Max, like you guys were having your own conversations. Mm-hmm. It was, and me and Kobe just kind of like locked in for like 25 minutes and basically did our own podcast without recording it, where he's talking about his life and his kids and I'm talking about my kids and my life. And yeah, it was really, really great. And then at the end of it, I was kind of sad we had to go because we had to kind of keep it moving, but I kind of want to just keep chatting with Kobe Karl.
Well, a couple of things really stood out just from that part of the day, because obviously Nick is Nick fucking Nurse, head coach, NBA championship under his belt, but every other assistant coach has an interesting story. Like, you know, one guy played D1 at Villanova and then played in Germany for 8 years. And like, and now he's coaching with the 76ers. I'm like, okay, who has he been connected to? Who has he played against? You know, who are his friends? And you kind of go through each person who's had their own life in basketball that's really impressive. And you could have an hour-long conversation with each one of these people.
Is it normal for just three random dudes to just show up at practice and start like talking to everyone? Like how common is
that? I don't know if it's that common, but I think Nick had prepped everybody because everybody who came up was like, oh, the band's here. Band's here. So I think Nick must have good.
And also the conversations were in like the cafeteria. Like they're all on their break at this point. So we're all like, you just kind of, you sit down, you know, like in high school or something, and then you just start chatting with people.
Yeah, and also I want to give a shout out to the DJ. Played nothing but R. Kells when we were there.
Oh my God. Well,
one song starts playing and Joel Embiid just putting up, you know, shots, and it's like, you know, you were all done up.
That's like, hilarious. You know?
And then it's like, oh, and then another one.
And then another, and
did
it was
any
like,
of the players say anything?
No,
about
they were
I saw Tyrese Maxey mouthing along. No, I'm just kidding. And the other thing, which is cool, is that I know in the NBA, it's like the version that you see of the players is like, what are they wearing as they're walking into the tunnel? What is like the cool thing they're posting at their car on social mm-hmm. media or whatever? But it was, so it was really cool to see the players interact in practice and just the way, like, you know, who's laughing with who, who's practicing with who.
You get a real look at chemistry.
You get a real look at chemistry. Yeah. But beyond that, all the staff and we talked about this afterward where it's like, oh God, I want to be part of an organization because everybody who's hired there is clearly a really like focused, bright, hardworking person. Because if you're a basketball lifer, you're only getting a job with the 76ers. If you were like the top guy in at like the high school or the college that you mm-hmm. were working
or
at,
super dedicated.
Yeah. Like every one of those, yeah. Every one of those guys is like such a high achiever. Even if you're the 15th coach of a 16 coach staff, right? Yeah. It's like you were probably the best player at your high school. You're probably the only guy that got a D1 scholarship. You know, you were working. And I want to give a shout out to Botch. So John Corbaccio is Nick's sort of right-hand guy. He's a video coordinator.
Played, love Botch.
Was with him in Toronto. He's from Stony Creek. He went to elementary school with Arkell's tour manager, Eric Martin. So we have this sort of shared history with each other. And Botch has such a joy about him. And nothing is beneath Botch, and I mean that in the most complimentary way. He is there to support Nick because Nick has the most high pressure job basically in that mm-hmm. city. And whatever Nick needs, and it's like high level thinking stuff, but also, hey, Botch, can you grab some food? Like whatever it is, can you help load in a little bit of the gear? Botch, yeah. Gotta coach. And as a result though, having that attitude of being someone who the coach is unafraid to ask for anything has led him on the most amazing life journey himself because Botch has all these great stories about the Raptors championship run.
Yeah.
So it was amazing just to sort of see the inner workings and the relationships of a professional basketball team. And it made us all want to go, oh God, I want to be on a professional.
I want to
work for a Raptors.
It was cool too because a lot of the Toronto people that came down, like the joined Nick staff that had been here, they all knew Greg Vierman.
Oh, wow.
Because Greg had been, oh, this is Greg Vierman's brother. His brother does open gyms. And so like right away, you know, like someone like Botch would be like, oh, big G, you know, and like, mm-hmm. there's just something really, I think all these people that grew up in team sports too, just understand like vibes and sort of like, I don't know. There's something really welcoming and cool about the environment there.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that makes Nick so special is his energy levels are so impressive. Like he doesn't really seem to get tired and he likes, I think, bouncing around, you know, from practice to, you know, he has such a large group of friends. He was hosting us. You know, he's sort of kind of wheeling and dealing all day long in the best possible way, but just always so like locked in,
focused
on the work. And, you know, on the game day, the following day, you know, we didn't see him all day. Like he left the house at 7:30. He actually, it was funny. He was like, hey, I only have the one car. Do one of you want to drive in with me? And then you guys can take the car for the rest of the day. And
that's kind of a terrifying prospect.
Yeah, right. Just like going through Philly rush hour traffic and crashing the coach's car. And all of us were like, no, thanks. It's okay. So we just like slept in. But then we didn't see him until
we got to the arena.
We didn't see him until after the game.
You're right.
So from 7:30 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. when we came home with him, it's like he was just working and locked in at the arena all day long.
Are you guys eating at Nick's house? Like what do meals look like?
Yeah, we ordered some pizza the night before. We went into town. He lives in a suburb and ate some breakfast. And then we went into the arena for early because we wanted to kind of take it all in. We got to watch courtside, the warm up. And we were in the friends and family suite, which is fun because we got to see the players after the game come pick up like their wives and kids and see their cousins and brothers and stuff like that. So we were sort of part of that. And it was just, it's you kind of go, you know, there's all these high achievers that are working with the team. But like, you know, Nick's sort of motor is sort of unlike anything else. I think.
Does he have a special diet to maintain this energy? Like,
I think he's just like that.
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
Yeah. He feels like largely, I mean, I've only hung out with him a few times before that, at your birthday party and at some Arkell shows, but he feels like largely the same, man. He's just like, and obviously Philly's been, you know, a real success story this year. They're on like a little bit of a dip right now, as all teams do. But he's awesome, man. And even like, I don't know, like it was kind of cool. His place is awesome. He's got like, He's a, what I love about Nick is he's like kind of a real gearhead. Like he gets excited. I think we can say this. That he has Bob Dylan's piano. He has Bob Dylan's piano from Bob Dylan up to New York. He has this like amazing portrait of Bob playing the piano where Bob's got his two little kids there. And Nick just has his piano, but he has John Lee Hooker, like a guitar that John Lee Hooker used back in like the 60s. But he's not like, he's not an antique collector that's precious. He's like, hey, here, he just hands Sean like John Lee Hooker's guitar. He's like, oh, sit down. I'm just playing piano on Bob Dylan's piano. And you're just kind of like, oh, this is kind of the best type of music, sort of like this sort of musician or like
fandom and appreciation. Fandom.
And just like, it's like, hey, like I have these cool things and it's like, let's play. And here's an acoustic. And then we made some music and it was like, it'd been a long time since I'd like jammed or played and it was awesome. And you know, I think we were saying on the last pod that Sean was kind of like, I got to learn some songs or whatever. But like Sean, once he settled in, like he was loving it.
Yeah. We met a local Philly drummer, this guy, Marlon, a big Sixers fan. So he was great. And he sang and everybody took turns. And, but the funny thing is I was just thinking about like, sort of like the integrity that Nick has just as a person and as a leader. And I'm like, what's the difference between Nick and I? It's like, well, there's one glaring difference. I would never drive somebody to the airport. And Nick insisted on driving us to the airport to drop us off the next morning.
Did he do it?
Yeah.
Wow.
like he was up waiting for us. He got the car warm. Like,
that's
so
weird.
Yeah.
Because at a certain point, it's like, just pay for an Uber.
Like, I know. And he's like, no, I'll take you to the airport. I'm like, Nick, you don't need to. And then the next morning, he's up ready to go. He's like, let's go.
Wow.
It's great.
We should talk about actually going to the game. So like you said, we got to the arena early, like 5:30. Actually, first we went to this one place and Max forgot his fucking ID. So we weren't going to be able to have a drink before the game. And then we had to sneak him a beer and you felt like a criminal. Like if we got caught, we'd get kicked out by these Philly bouncers.
Yeah.
You get ID'd when you ask for a beer?
No, I think in this one bar, you just needed a real ID. I had made it on my phone, but I didn't. It wasn't because they thought
you just pull up your Wikipedia, right? Sure.
So this was like it's called something live,
Xfinity Live.
Yeah, and it's like part because in Philly, all of the sports stadiums are in a cluster. So it's like you have where the Eagles play, you have the Sixers.
Yeah.
I think the Phillies, are they in that cluster too?
Sports
grouping in this one part of town. Anyway, so we go to the arena and we go through this cool sort of area that obviously is like whatever we give our name, and it ends up being the tunnel, like you know the tunnel walk, and every team has where you shoot the fits. So we go through and it's got these kind of like lights and we like walk. I don't watch a lot of like local Philly shit. So like Sean immediately knew this was the tunnel walk. So he's like, you know, I didn't know. I just thought it was like some glow tunnel that you go through or whatever. And then Max is taking photos. I'm like, oh, I guess this is like the fit walk or whatever. So we get in, this really nice woman greets us and we get these like family and friend badges and she gives us a tour of like where we're hanging out. And so we're in this family and friends room where everything is like, you know, obviously free. It's like they got meals, they got open bar, and you're just kind of like, and there's like kids running around and like, I'm like, oh, is this like an overflow room? Like maybe we're in this sort of second room, you know what? I don't know. But then you start kind of being like, oh no, I think we're in the main room where they have like a spot for the kids. And anyway, this will come back.
And also if you
later.
See the, because we all had name tag, like badges, lanyards, and ours said like guest of M. Kerman.
Yes.
But if you could find the other guest of,
I never thought
like
to do
P.
that.
Reed. So it's like, oh, the guest of Paul Reed, B-ball Paul, who's a player in the thing. So that's how you knew that. Yeah.
Well, I was waiting for the bathroom at one point and we were just all, I was making jokes with some dudes that were, cause it was a long lineup. So I'm just, you know, making jokes or whatever. And this one like big guy, I can't remember what happened was somebody who had been waiting and like, sort of, it wasn't quite clear if you get this bathroom or if you, cause it was two lineups, but two bathrooms, and they might've been waiting longer. So then we let like the one guy go, like me and this big guy. And then we let the girl go too. And I was like, that one was a little iffy, but it was the right thing to do. He was like, yeah, it was the right thing to do. And I was like, who are you here with? He's like, Pat Bev. I'm like, oh, Pat Bev. I love Pat Bev. I'm like, I'm a Raptors fan though. And he said, our team doesn't have any dogs. He's like, what do you think? And I go, I don't think he was wrong. And we're like having a laugh. Anyway, we go out to, and we sit courtside and former pod guest Tim Bontemps comes by, daps up Max, remembers me. We did dap it up. We're chatting. He's, you know, Tim's talking about, you know, it's going to be a big game tonight, blah, blah, blah. New York, Philly. Also, New York's only, I think, an hour drive from Philly or
hour and a half.
The arena was like half Knicks fans. It was crazy. It was a pretty cool atmosphere. But anyway, Bontemps is their big ESPN game. And we're talking about the Quickley trade because the Raptors got Quickley. And I'm like, I'm so excited. And he's like, yeah, he's like, I think you guys got like, I think he's going to have an ascension very much like Jalen Brunson on the Knicks. And I'm like, no, man, he's going to be Maxi. And I'm, you know, I'm just being excited. And I think Tim would like, you just kind of nod along. He's like, I don't think he's that athletic. Like he's actually having a real conversation with me about this. So anyway, that was great. And then,
yeah, and he's like, Also, Brunson's like a perennial all-star now.
He's like, what are you complaining about? He's like, what's with the weirdo?
Totally. And then we end up going back to friends and family, grab a couple drinky poos, head up to our seats, whatever, which are great. They're like 13th row, mid-court, facing the benches. And then the game starts again. Like, I'm living it through Sean's eyes. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that way sometimes?
Of course. The whole time I was just thinking about Sean.
Well, because like we're both hoops fans. We watch a lot of League Pass. Mm-hmm. We're like, you know, we're in the chat. Like, we're league fans, not just Raptors fans. So it's like there's something to it for us. Mm-hmm. But through Sean's eyes, I was just so happy for him. And Derek. We can't say enough about Derek because Derek's in his basketball chat. I know him. I've said hi to him. I think I met him in person once before in our Kel's show, but I only know him through our basketball chat. So to spend you spend 48 hours, more than that, 72 hours with a guy, 2 nights, 3 days with a guy, you get to know him well and you never know, right? Like, cause me, you and Sean have been on a million trips, bachelor trips. We know each other through and through. But Derek was just awesome.
Fit right in. And I knew that would be the case because Derek is such a great conversationalist, as is you and Sean are. But you guys didn't know each other, so you wouldn't have known that. But in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is a natural fit. And we got right into the nitty gritty immediately about life, breaking down life.
But also, he's a laugher. So there's the jokes are flying. We're breaking down life. Fucking amazing musician, unsurprisingly. Yeah. So it's like in the jam, you just, like, it's funny with a jam because it's like, say you have a song like, I don't know, like The Weight, right? It's like, oh, I know all the chords to The Weight. I can play The Weight on chords. But there's little bits, right? Like, little licks and stuff. Yeah. Derek is like the perfect glue guy because he just knows the licks to everything. Or you get to like the solo in like Champagne Supernova and he just knows it. You're just like, wow, that's the guy you need in a jam because it makes it feel less than just us all playing the chords.
And it's funny because I think Nick leans on me a little bit in jam situations just to be a bit of the conductor.
Yes.
To be like, okay, here's the next song we're going to play. Here's who's going to sing. I'll count it in. Like, someone just needs to be that guy. But I can't play any of those licks, but that's why I need Derek. You know what I mean? Like, I need my guy to hold it together because it does not sound nearly as good if it's just me barking things out.
Who were the singers?
I sang Marlon, the drummer sang Matt from Outdoor, sang a bit.
Yeah. Didn't Mike sing?
Mike sang a couple of Oasis and Nick. Yep. Nick sang. We all sang. Yep. We all sang.
Derek, are you nervous at all?
No. Because what you realize is it doesn't feel any different. I don't get much nervous about anything these days. It's like, you know, I think you said this years ago with work. It was like, oh, I have a kid. Like, I don't.
Yeah, stakes seem lower.
Stakes are much lower. Yeah. And like, as far as like, I've met Nick before and guys are just jamming. It doesn't change much. You know what I mean? And it's just like, you sing it, you have a laugh and you keep it moving. And it's like,
You see, speaking of kids, at the beginning of the trip, Mike is like, I'm a time millionaire right now. I have so much time.
I've never heard him say that before.
Yeah. That's new. I was like, I lose nothing but time. I'm a time millionaire right now. So anyway, the game ends. We go back to the friends and family room and Nick is going to drive us back to his place. So, there's a couple TVs on and I figured out how to work the remote and the Raptors game starts late. It's the Sacramento King, Toronto game. So the room starts to slowly clear out and it just, and eventually it's just the three of us in this empty room. The staff have all gone home. There's no more drinks. There's no anything. So we're watching.
So we're sitting in the friends and family room after the game now, and we're kind of just hanging this. It's kind of like a little living room area. It's really nice. And Max gets the Raps game on, which is on the West Coast. So it was perfect timing. And we're kind of just chilling and they still got some Diet Cokes and stuff, but the drinks have been stopping served. And there's still some little kids running around. And at that point it's like Nick Batum walks by. And then who walks by?
Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid. Oh, wow. To go get his kids. No, he just kind of walked by like our little area. Maybe he peeked over, saw we were watching the Raps, just kept him moving and went and grabbed like whatever. I think he's got one kid. I don't know. Wow. But we just were in the living room. But it's like, all the players, kids and wives, we're actually hanging out in here. And these guys, they finish their job and they come and they get their families and they go home or whatever. But then it was kind of just us as we were waiting for Nick.
So we're waiting for Nick.
Wait, actually, do you remember this point?
What?
Where we're sitting there and it's like, it's been the best weekend. And I was a time millionaire like 2 hours before. Yes, and I see there's this one like really cute little girl. And like, her dad or her uncle is like, he's like, come on. And she's like, no, I want to play. And she's like dancing or whatever. He's like, come on. And then she kind of comes toggling up to him. And I was just sitting there like after this amazing weekend, really good buzz on the free beer. And I was just like, I really miss my kids. No. This is like the moment where I miss my kids or whatever. Yeah. And then we start watching the Raps thing.
But then Mike's bank account realized that it's dwindling right now. Yeah. His time millionaire bank account.
And then he turns, right?
And then he goes, Maxie, do you think we should just go downtown to a bar? We should probably go to a bar. We can watch the King thing. We should go to the guy. I'm like, I think Nick wants to drive us home. I don't know if we should be rolling in like 2 in the morning. He's like, okay. And then like 20 minutes pass. And he's like, and the bank account is just dwindling. We should go to a bar just because Mike is like, after tonight, I am in it for the next like a month.
Broke. Yeah.
You're broke. You're broke. You know, it's like not only like are you like back in dad mode, but you have an, you two, I should say, have the busiest possible month ahead of you. There's not a minute to spare.
No.
So I can just see the math going on in Mike's head being like, I need to squeeze every drop out of this trip. I need to, you know. So, but I'm like, Mike, like let's just, you know, anyway, Nick eventually comes around.
I think the way I framed it was, was just to be sure.
Just to be sure.
Would it be, because we hadn't been down to downtown Philly at all. Yeah. It was basically, we were only at Nick's. I'm like, and Derek had never been to Philly. I'm clearly just justifying things. Right? I was like, just to put it out there one more time. Like, we are in Philly. We haven't gone downtown yet. We haven't done anything. We haven't gone to Sean's favorite dive bar, Bob and Barbara's.
In service of Sean, in service of Derek.
I'm like, what do we think? And Nick's like, he's like, or Max is like, we should probably do this. And I was like, you're right.
But and I didn't mean to be the guy stifling the fun.
No, you were right. You framed it awesomely though.
But I was like, you know what? I was like, Mike, I think it'll be great because how often do we have a chance to ride back with a head coach of an NBA team after a game?
Yeah.
That experience of just being able to talk to him about what happened in the game, what worked, priceless. What didn't work. Like no one has access to that. No documentary film crew really does. Cause you know, there'd be a level of candor that wouldn't be there. The press doesn't have that. Nobody has.
Hear it. How'd it go?
It was exactly as cool as you'd imagine because like we drove home with him and it was probably like a 25 minute car. And then what happened was, so we get home, we talk about the game. And there's 4 minutes left in the Raptors game. So we're like, let's
throw it on. It was almost like the fourth quarter. It was like the whole fourth quarter.
Yeah. And so we ended up just watching the game with Nick. And Nick, watching an NBA game with a head coach who's like locked in and predicting the play calls and talking about what call was good and what was not, like, was so fascinating.
It might have been my favorite part of the weekend when I thought about it afterwards was that fourth quarter watching the Raps and his insights and us getting into it. And it came down to like the last possession. So it was a great, they came back from 20 down. It was a really, 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 that was like a sweet spot of the trip, I think.
Yeah. And then anyway, and then the next morning we're getting up to go to the airport and Nick's driving us there. And Mike goes, Max, good call. I'm not hungover. I'm feeling amazing. We had the amazing hang with Nick after the game. Great work. So I felt good.
It's true. 100% true.
All right. Well, this is a good episode. And I think the theme of this episode was sort of about like staying young, youthful vigor. You know, Nick Nurse didn't, achieve a championship until he was 50.
Yeah.
He was working hard for so long. And now he's never jamming. Never too late.
The takeaway is collect experiences.
Yeah.
Because these are the things, whether you're Bert and sort of the extraordinary things he did before and after he met Shane, or you're sort of Nick Nurse living this wild life, or the rest of us sort of just trying to find our own experiences, do as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. And if some weird guy pulls up to you and asks you for a lift, say yes.
get in.
That's it. That's all. That's our episode. And one last thing before we go, as I'm saying my thank yous, we got to say happy birthday to Manager Ash.
Yes.
It's not your birthday today.
No, but saying it because we haven't,
belated.
We haven't seen you in person since. Mm-hmm. So happy birthday. How was that night, by the way? Just quickly.
Lovely. Big snowfall.
Did you guys go hard? Did you party?
Of course.
No, I don't know. Let's wrap it up. Okay. That's where it'll be for another podcast. Thank you so much to Nathan Nash for everything he does. Thank you so much to Manager Ash for all she does. And happy birthday. Guys, it was a great hang. Maybe the best.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.